Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
All year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It's hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday. 1 week ago right now. If you were listening, you were hearing Dan Matthews talk, and I'm sure it was a fine program. I always say, same measuring stick. Did we lose affiliates? He said no. FCC fines? Also no. It was a successful 3 days with Dan rocking the mic. I was in Dallas, and I'd mentioned this, and then, I wanted to talk a little bit more about this, but, I mean, it was such a huge weekend of games, and, I mean, we're still working our way through it. But I do want to tell y'all exactly what was going on. Like I said, I have mentioned this a little bit, but it was – I got invited about, I don't know, a month ago, about 6 weeks ago. I got invited to be part of – from the College Football Playoff Committee, from the organization, to be part of a mock selection process at the facility, the Gaylord Texan Resort, which it's a world-class resort, folks. Now, it's a world-class resort with wagon wheels and cowboy boots and, you know, a lot of that. But it's just a fantastic place. And they have the same bank of suites and the same boardroom, meeting rooms, actually a little suite of meeting rooms as well. They have those same rooms available all year. That's where the college football playoff does their business. And so what happens the final 5 or 6 weeks of the season is these 13 individuals on the actual committee start going out to – they fly to Dallas, take about, a 15-minute lift out to Grapevine, and boom, you're at this facility. So over the process of watching games Saturday and discussing Sunday and then releasing the rankings and all, I showed up with 12 other individuals, and it was other folks in media, Roy Philpott. It was Kelly Stauffer and Kirk Morrison, Devin Gardner, just a bunch of folks there. And Ari Wasserman. Do you know him? Ari Wasserman from The Athletic and recruiting and gambling and all kinds of stuff. So there's just a real mixed bag of folks there. And the point was they invited 13 folks out to Dallas to the actual place where the College Football Playoff Committee meets and goes through the process, and they said, you're going to function as the committee, the 13 of you. And so I got the same notebook, sat down, had the same laptop, had the same giant monitor, like the big one at the end of the room, and the configuration in the room was done perfectly. There's three or four folks who sort of run things, Bill Hancock and, you know, whoever. And they sit at the top of the table. Well, in this U, this giant U, that's where the 13 committee members meet. And by the way, Bill said, this is all on the record. He's like, go back, talk about it. Absolutely. So I walk into the room, and I think that I was the Wyoming athletic director. I think that was where I was sitting. So for the process of this college football playoff exercise, committee exercise, what we did is they brought in 13 of us, said, you are the committee, and we are going to basically let y'all experience what the committee experienced after Championship Saturday was concluded at the end of the 2014 regular season. Now, to remind you, that was the first year we had playoffs, and that was the Baylor-TCU thing. So if you can get your mind back there, that's what we were doing. And remember, at the end of that 2014 season, the eventual field in the playoffs, Alabama, Florida State, Oregon, and Ohio State. And so we sat down and started going through the process. And they have a – and I'll skip a lot of the details because it'd be minutia, but I'm telling – they have figured out the right way to go from 131 teams down to 25 teams, down to the actual 12 teams in the New Year's Six Bowl, down to the four teams that are in the playoffs. the way the structure of the voting, how it's done, it's a really, really effective way. But all of that, that's just my experience, and it was cool and it was awesome, and I was there 3 days and it was great. So understand that we walked in and there was a dinner and a reception like at the beginning of the process and explanations on Wednesday night, and then Thursday and Friday, that's what it was. Then I came home. It was the end of the regular season 2014. We were given the notebooks, the computers, the monitors, all the information the same as 2014. It could have been any year. They just picked that year because the overall point is this is how teams actually make it into the playoffs or are left out. This is how a team actually makes it to a New Year's Six Bowl or misses. This is how a team even winds up in the top 25, because a couple of quick takeaways. The first four, folks, now that I've experienced it, man, and I look at it now, I start looking at standings and scores and outcomes. It's easy. It is easy to process right now what's going to happen with the playoffs and even the expanded version of it. So a couple of takeaways. And like I said, there's a lot of education there, but I mean, this, I have so much more insight into this stuff now, and I already had been following it, but it could have been any year. They happen to choose 14. I'm going to give you a perfect example of what I'm talking about. All right. Well, what about what four teams do we want to bring up to discuss first? And that was a question that got asked a lot, because one of the best tools they have is this up to four team side-by-side comparison. And so, Chuck, who do you want to bring up? I was like, oh, okay, I'm on the clock. Well, we know Alabama and Florida State will make it. Let's bring up Oregon, Ohio State, TCU, and Baylor. So we got four teams looking for, and really we had three teams looking for one spot, but we said we got four teams after these two spots. So when you bring up the teams, it says, all right, here are the name of the team, Baylor, TCU, Ohio State, you know, Oregon. Overall record, conference record, record versus top 25, record versus top 10, and then it gives you average scoring, differential, defense, special teams, passing, defense, turnover margin. It gives you every stat you could. It's there if you choose to look at it. It's all there. But if you scroll down one screen, it will then show each of the four teams side by side their schedule. And they'll do it in order, week one, week two, week three, and you just see who everybody played and the results and all that. But the interesting takeaway is there's this little alternating rainbow of green and white and red, because every team in Division One, and here is the number one takeaway, and this is what decides who's in the playoffs, and then also who's in the rotation bowls, and then who's in the top 25, because I got to tell you, the top four, folks, that is easy. 2014 experience, actually going through what the it was easy. There was never a chance for TCU and Baylor. It's easy every year for the top four. It's sort of easy for the rotation bowls. Do you know where really splitting hairs gets to be? For a program like Army or Coastal Carolina or Troy, they know they're not going to the playoffs. You know what they want? If they finish ranked 22nd, in the college football playoff, that's a huge, huge deal in the final rankings to a program like Army or Coastal Carolina or Troy. That's where you're splitting hairs. Now, here is how you make the playoffs or you get left out. Here's how you get a rotation bowl or you don't. Here's how, if you are Coastal, you wind up finish ranked in the playoff rankings or you don't. Here is it. This is 51% at least. Schedule. Specifically, all 131 teams, Division One, all 131 teams in FBS, based on how they finished ranked 1 through 131, number one, if it was Alabama, I mean deep, dark green. As you get to number 30, still green, but a little lighter green. As you get to about 50, lime green, fading. Team 65, right in the middle, pure white. Then as you get into the 70s, you see this faint pink hue. And I'm talking about it will say the name of the school, its record, the game out, whatever. It'll list your 12 opponents. And beside each opponent, there is a square. You line up the 12 teams. Each of the 12 teams has this square, this color-coded square between green and dark red, showing what caliber of opponent it was that year. And if you play the 33rd ranked team, that's going to be pretty green, and that's going to look good. You play the 83rd ranked team, well, that's going to have a good amount of red, but a little pink, so that's not great, but you can survive it. You play FCS teams, or you play teams ranked outside, say, the top 100, you're wrecking any chance you have if you need the committee to discuss you. You're wrecking any, that's it. Now, it's not just the schedule where they rank them weeks 1 through 13 and you see your 12 opponents. Here is the most illuminating moment that happens for the committee every single time they meet. There is a search function for the schedule where you can then rank, put the four teams up there. All right, I want to see their schedules ranked in order of how difficult to play they are. I brought up LSU and Marshall among, because we were talking about who to advance into the next, you know, the next tier of bowl games. LSU went 8-4 that year. Marshall was 12-1. And I talked about this before. Marshall is the team, I think when they were 10-0, the committee told Marshall, it doesn't matter if you go fit, you go 25-0, add games, go 30-0. If they're all like these teams you played, it won't matter. You win all your games, it won't matter because your schedule is so bad. And I thought, well, that was kind of harsh. And I talked about it. And see, this is what I'm saying. In the moment, I was like, no, wait a minute. If they go 13-0, and they didn't, they lost to Western Kentucky 67-66, I think. And Western Kentucky was like 7-6 that year. But they were a conference champion. They went 12-1, and they weren't within 15 miles of even a rotation bowl. And they shouldn't have been. And this is why. When you choose to search schedule by strength, it'll line up a team like LSU, a team that goes 8-4. And you will see either dark green to sort of lightish green down to like opponent 8, 9, 10. Marshall had a lime green, an almost white, a pink, and it looked like an axe murder after that. You look at the final 8 or 9 opponents, and do you know what really killed them? They chose to schedule Rhode Island. If you schedule any FCS team, even a good one that may beat you, like James Madison, it's a void. It counts as 131. If you are the Georgia Bulldogs right now, do you know the one thing you need to do? If you are LSU, if you are Alabama, it is a new day, folks. What you need to do more than anything, stop pinching pennies. Stop acting like you're in, and I hate to say this, stop acting like you're in the Mountain West. Colorado State, I think it matters if Colorado State had to pay an opponent $600,000 or $1.3 million, they're going $600,000 every time because they're Colorado State in the Mountain West. Alabama, never, ever play an FCS team again. And with some group of five, I'm saying you're Alabama, okay? The difference between paying $600,000 to have Utah State show up or $1.3 million for, I don't know, Kansas State, that's a rounding error to you. You're Alabama. Schedule like it. I'm telling you, folks, the one thing that and it ended every conversation was when they would search the schedule by strength and you would see how quickly it, because when we did that with Baylor, I raised my hand and I said, well, this pretty quickly became a three-team conversation, and Baylor was out without any more commentary. It is the schedule. And by the way, now beyond that, some interesting takeaways. What decides who wins games, according to the College Football Playoff Committee? It is relative scoring offense. It is the number one most important statistic there is, relative scoring offenses. This is what I'm saying. I was mentioning Miami of Ohio has a good offense. If they average 42 a game, well, they played in the MAC. What does that mean? That's a fair question. Because if you average 42, but most teams, you know, they give up 36, well, all right, well, you were 6 points better. What is that? 2014, Alabama had a relative scoring efficiency of 177%. Saturday by Saturday, Alabama would score almost double what that team was giving up to, quote, a normal offense. Relative scoring offense, the single most deciding factor about winning games in today's college football. There is relative passing offense is one of the top two or three as well. There is one defensive metric in like the top six. And then believe it or not, special teams, it's not valued as much. It is about scoring a bunch versus what is expected and a lot of times doing it through the air. That's how you win in today's college football, and that's just the truth of it. In fact, when you, you're de-emphasizing special teams. What have we said? De-emphasizing. Teams don't even punt anymore. I saw. Did you see Kentucky the other day? Their first possession of the game, they had a 4th-and-1 on like the 30-yard line. They're 30. Yeah, we're going for it. Why? Well, we averaged 5.5 yards play. I understand how the math works. So that's with the de-emphasizing a special team. So that's it. It was a fantastic exercise. I learned so much. But it is very clear. Folks, I can tell you right now, as we go through the rest of this season, who's in the playoffs and who's not, it's a lot easier for that committee every year than we think.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Elite players can have that Saturday. And if they are Tim Tebow, it's kind of every Saturday. If it's Adrian Martinez, it can be two or three Saturdays a season. And this past weekend, if you're Dylan Gabriel and you have 400 yards of offense, four touchdowns, don't turn it over, you're supposed to get the Gillette Player of the Game Award. Adrian Martinez almost matched him yard for yard, had another touchdown, five, and K-State got the win. So OU moves on into the rest of their season. They are in conference right now, and they got to go take on a TCU team that is surprising some folks. They are, again, in the future of the SEC, and we will talk them now with a good friend of ours. Always love catching up when it's time to talk a little Sooners. Host of The Rush on The Ref out yonder in OKC, 94.7 FM. It is Tyler McComas. Tyler, how are you, brother?
I'm good. How are you, Chuck? Good to hear from you.
Yeah. Where is Oklahoma right now as far as year one, the, quote, system with Lebby and Dylan Gabriel and all the transfers, but where are they now following a loss? And you can talk health-wise, you can talk playbook-wise, continuity. What's your feel for this team?
Well, look, it's a simple question, but an incredibly tough answer because through the first, what, three games of the year, you thought, oh, my God, we were right. Everyone nationally was wrong. We were right. Brent Venables was the guy. He was the ideal hire. They are going to be better immediately. They're going to be a college football playoff team. Yeah, Nebraska's not that good, but, oh, you could have won that game 70-7 if they wanted to. So you have this overinflated, like, sense of what this team actually is, and then you get beat by home, get beat at home by Kansas State in a game that you never led. And a game where you lost the exact same way that you've been accustomed to losing for the past 10 years, making an average quarterback look elite, not being able to tackle, not being able to get off the field on third down. Where is this team right now? I still think it's good, and I think that that was a one-game setback, but this Saturday will tell you everything we need to know.
If we look at Oklahoma as they get through the rest of the season, as you said, after 3 weeks, it looked XYZ, and then it was a little bit of a wake-up. Defensively, that has been a little bit of a surprise. I mean, you know, you think Grant's going to turn it around, it's going to be a great defense, and that's one of the reasons you got to change over and Venables is in charge. Now, what as far as the X's and O's and how they're approaching defense have you seen change with Venables now? Because he's the head coach.
Yeah, they're doing a more fronts now. It is more of a intricate defense than what they've had in the past. We heard around here for a decade of, well, we're just going to make it more simple around here for the guys, which is never really something I think that you want to hear when you're struggling defensively. So it's more complex, but that's also a lot mentally on these guys. And you've got a lot of young players on this defense. Danny Stutzman has a very high ceiling. He's a sophomore. Billy Bowman's got a very high ceiling. He's a sophomore. Same thing with Ethan Downs. Like, you've got some guys that once they get it mentally, I think they're going to turn into a really good defense. And they've been a good defense at times so far this year. But schematically, they look a whole lot different, Chuck.
And I'm right about this. I mean, I know they hired, we talked about this, Ted Roof, but there are certain times when you look around, like Lincoln Riley, Jimbo Fisher, I don't care who the OC is, I know who runs things. That's Venables and his defense and his DNA, correct?
Yeah, no, it is. And you're seeing some similar things as to what you saw at Clemson. And once they get these down linemen that they're starting to get, by the way, sounds like OU's going to get five-star defensive lineman David Hicks at about 3:30 Central today to bolt OU into the number two overall recruiting class. Once you see them get more guys like this, and OU might have the best defensive line haul this entire 2023 class, that's when you're going to really see that defense take off.
All right, man. I appreciate it as always, Tyler. Have you on again soon, brother. All right, Tyler McComas again. Every afternoon, 2 to 6, afternoon drive there in Oklahoma City. And as we said, the Sooners, it is an 11 a.m. local kick out there in Fort Worth against TCU, who actually comes in 3-0. And all they did was go across town to SMU and say, hey, we'll send a U-Haul, bring the whole coaching staff over, and just import that to TCU as they transition away from Gary Patterson. And to this point, for whatever it matters to you, the first three games of a season, TCU's 3-0, it has worked. And they actually have some real opponents. At Colorado, Colorado is awful, but it's a Power 5 team, and it was on the road. And then at Southern Methodist as well, which, I mean, it's a little further than Houston and Rice and some of the other really short road trips, but not much. And they had to work, and they had to make it happen. But then you're going to dial it up quite a few spots again with Sonny Dykes there. You're going to dial it up quite a few spots with Oklahoma. At Kansas, which at Kansas, it actually – I mean, that's not supposed to matter, okay, if you're TCU. But at Kansas, who's undefeated, and then Oklahoma State and beyond. So the Big 12, for different reasons, is actually an intriguing conference right now.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states, 56 sticks. It is what we do, talking college football. And we just turned 8 years. I was in Dallas, like I said, last week for that college football playoff. Had me out there. For 3 days, we turned 8, so we had our 8th birthday party, so yay for us. I want to welcome on now a guy, a good friend of mine. I'm going to call him good friend of the program as well, ESPN Arkansas, every morning 6 to 9. It is Ty Richardson. Brother, how you doing today?
Man, it's always good to join the Keen. What do I got to do to get invited to one of those soirees down in Dallas, man?
Oh, you're next on the list, man. They're like, who do you want next? And I was like, Ty. Put my friend Ty in there. So maybe you'll get the next invite. Who knows? Let's talk Alabama-Arkansas. I think this is a heck of a comment on Arkansas. Alabama's always Alabama. It's, all right, well, what's the opponent? Alabama-Arkansas is the CBS afternoon window. Kentucky and Ole Miss, they're undefeated versus undefeated, and they got to play early. That is a comment on what Arkansas is and what this game could be. Let's talk health and let's talk between the ears for Arkansas coming off the past weekend.
Health-wise, Sam Pittman just announced that Ladarius Bishop, one of their secondary players, he's out for the year. He's been away, I think, for a couple weeks now. To my knowledge, there's not another injury that has been at least on the table or something that's made its way to through the rumor or the message boards. The mental aspect you referred to, Chuck, I mean, they had that game. They had that game. That's the first time they've been more talented since A&M since 2011. They let it slip away. That's either going to push them over the edge against the Crimson Tide, or it's going to cause a backlash, and Crimson Tide are going to beat their brains in on Saturday.
Let's talk defense, and we'll just go ahead and talk that matchup against the Bryce Young and the Alabama, and Jahmyr Gibbs and the rest of them, the Alabama offense. You've had to work this year to run the ball, to move it on the ground against Arkansas. Through the air, a little bit easier. It terrifies me, Bryce Young against the secondary there, the pass defense, the sporadic pass rush, which occasionally Drew Sanders will bust up somebody, but just consistency is what you – tell me about that matchup, Bryce Young and the four or five receivers against Arkansas on the back seven.
Oh, it's the biggest matchup on the field defensively. I think we shift to the defensive line portion of the question. If they can get pressure, you watched that Texas game. Texas was in his face in the backfield all night long. Bryce is an incredible football player. There's a reason he won the Heisman Trophy. But, Chuck, you know as well as I do, if you're under duress the entire game, you can't really showcase your skill. Arkansas has got to watch that Texas tape and figure out a way to use what Gary Patterson and company were able to get to Bryce this upcoming Saturday.
All right, I mentioned Drew Sanders. There are other players, and there's a difference, and I say this all the time, between tackles and plays. Do you make tackles? Do you make plays? Drew Sanders making plays. That guy, he is as impactful as anybody in the SEC I have seen coming through the portal. Tell me what you've seen from Drew Sanders four games.
Leading the way with 5.5 sacks. He is mocked right now on Mel Kiper's big board as the number one linebacker coming out of college. He's been a godsend for Sam Pittman, and to team him alongside now the all-time leading tackler in Bumper Pool in Arkansas. That they got some good stuff up the middle. It's just, again, a question of that back end. So, yeah, Drew Sanders is big, magnificent. I mean, he looks like he gets shot out of a cannon sometimes. 6'5", and he can maul some guys down there, Chuck.
All right, but on the back end, as you said, Catalan and Slusher, and so it's just a tough go. Let's talk offensively. It works. Texas A&M, they're fast. They had a really good second half, especially after the fast start. Why didn't the fast start continue? What's the key for Arkansas to keep that game going?
You can't let one play take you out of the game. They're going to make a mistake on Saturday, as KJ did, trying to jump from the 3-yard line. Offense wasn't the same after that. It took till basically in the middle of the fourth quarter for them to get back going again. Alabama takes your weaknesses and shoves it back in your face. If they do that, you have to respond. You can't cower. You can't fall over. So I think it's that one play that Arkansas has that if they make a mistake, you got to right the ship. They've got to do it on Saturday.
There were questions about some of the transfer receivers, Hazelwood certainly among them, but there's similar in a couple of different cases. Hazelwood, what about the hands and the consistency? Warren Thompson, the hands and consistency. Talk through a quarter or actually a third of the season, what you have seen through Hazelwood, Landers, Thompson, if I'm forgetting anybody through the portal.
Yeah, so Hazelwood is their league leader, is the team leader right now in receptions. Warren Thompson just caught a long touchdown in the A&M game. They got a couple drops this year, but KJ's also got to put it on them. There's been a couple times when they've been open, the ball's behind them or it's in the dirt. That's something KJ's got to continue to work on. Matt Landers only had one catch in his last game. I hope he has a really good game against Alabama because at 6'5", he's been fun to watch, man. Defenses have to play 5 to 10 yards off of him because they know if they bump and run, they're going to get burned.
What do you think happens on Saturday? And, I mean, give me the beyond, like, +3 in turnovers and return 2 kicks. Arkansas is better than that. How can it really happen that the Hogs get the dub?
It's the pressure, and KJ's just got to have the game of his life. You go back and look at who Alabama's lost to since Nick Saban got to Tuscaloosa. Outside of Louisiana Monroe, maybe Zach Calzada, and a quarterback or two that I'm just not thinking about, it's a mobile quarterback. They lose to Johnny Manziel, Cam Newton, Tim Tebow, these guys that can make plays with their arms and their legs. KJ's got that body type. He loved watching Cam Newton. Why not beat him like Cam did? This is the perfect opportunity. They just lost a heartbreaker. They're back at home in front of this crowd. Chuck, it's been almost 6,000 days since Arkansas has beaten Alabama. Think about that. What were you doing in 2006? Heck, I don't remember. I was like a sixth grader. I mean, it's been that long, brother. So I think Arkansas, regardless of what the players say, that this is just another game, it means a heck of a lot more than that. You're going against the best college football coach of all time, best player in the country in Bryce Young, who won the Heisman last year. You just got to play out of your minds on Saturday.
Was that a Casey Dick product or a Mitch Mustaine product? What happened?
Mitch Mustaine.
Was it really?
Yeah. So, story behind that game, Lee Tiffin missed three field goals, I think one PAT off the uprights in overtime, and Mitch threw a pass to Ben Cleveland on a 3rd and 8 or a 3rd and 6 in overtime. Jeremy Davis kicked the extra point, and Mike Shula walked off the field ticked off.
I would have just handed it to Darren McFadden a bunch. Absolutely. So appreciate it as always, Ty. Talk to you soon, brother.
See you, Chuck.
All right, Ty Richardson again. Get him on Twitter at Ty Sports Radio and host of the Morning Rush 6 to 9 every morning, ESPN Arkansas. So just does a great job out there as well covering the Hogs. Always appreciate his time. But, yeah, 2006, it was Mitch Mustaine. If you remember, do you remember the top three quarterbacks in that class? Mitch Mustaine, Matt Stafford, Tim Tebow. And the last I heard of Tim Tebow, he was on ESPN and the SEC Network last weekend. I saw that. Matt Stafford's playing in NFL games, living in L.A. now. Like, he got to the end of the rainbow. And, like, the bad version of Matt Stafford's life was 10 years in Detroit, making about $200 million playing quarterback for the Lions. Then he got to move to Southern California and play for the Rams in a sparkly new crib and be a Super Bowl champion. Then there's Mitch Mustaine, who, at least professionally, it was more of a spotted track record. And I'm talking about a guy who was a first – I'm comparing him to a guy who was a first-round draft pick at quarterback who then played for the Columbia Fireflies. So that was Tim Tebow. And I'm saying Mitch Mustaine had an even more uneven professional career. Mitch Mustaine played in the Arena League – as a quarterback, but the last I heard, I think it was the Chicago White Sox, he had a tryout as a pitcher. And I don't know how it went. But those were the top three quarterbacks coming out of high school in 2000. It just shows you, you have no idea where, and they were ranked 1, 2, 3, 2, 1, 3, mixed bag. Didn't matter. Those were the top three. Everybody had him in some order, and three wildly different outcomes for them as well. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and we'll wrap up the show on a Wednesday next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
It's been tremendous in all aspects of having someone that has been a head coach before. And you can lean on him for input. He has a good pulse on the team. So all those things are critical to my success and critical to our team's success. I think he's been a key cog in our success because a lot of players have really good relationships with Dell.
All week, all year, it's all college football on Chuck Oliver's show. That's Kirby Smart. He is the head coach in the University of Georgia, and he is talking about Del. He's talking about Del McGee there, right? He has running backs coach, and yeah, he's the running backs coach at Georgia, and he's a recruiter, though, is what he does. And there are limitations on that sometimes. And I'm talking about from the person saying the words that there are times. I'll mention. We'll name names. James Coley. What was James Coley? He was wide receivers coach. That's important. Where do you quote? Hide or bury or put or assign? Where do you put your recruiters? Like your very first two recruiters, where do you put them? Running backs coach, wide receiver coach. That's just how it is. Now, you can have great recruiters everywhere, and you kind of need to have at least really good recruiters everywhere. But Del McGee is a running backs coach at a major, like now, national championship caliber program. All right, let me ask you a question. if you're the running backs coach at a program the caliber of what Georgia is now, who are you probably working with? It's not a bunch of try-hard guys or you know, walk-ons. Or do you see the story? Who is the kid? Oh, God. The Missouri running back, he led the nation in rushing last year at a Division II school, and he decided to walk on at Missouri, and he got the scholarship, and he starts. So he's a good, tough running back, and what a success story. That doesn't happen at Georgia. At Georgia, what happens is you have a four-star running back show up, and he gets to run a couple of 40s the first day of practice and stretching and all, and then he's turned into a corner. Wait a minute, I was a four-star All-State running back. Yeah. I went for 2,000 yards my senior year. Mm-hmm. I came here as a running back. Well, now you're a corner. Okay, well, now I play for Tulane. That's what Georgia does with running backs. So you start with the absolute best of the best of the best. And the position is what it is. Now, this doesn't take anything away from anybody who ever coaches wide receivers or running backs. But it's sort of like if you're putting together a baseball lineup, there are certain positions where you kind of expect it to be a power hitter, corner outfield, corner infield. Now, modern baseball, I mean, today's baseball, major league level, it can be anything. But there are certain – so you know that. On a coaching staff, there are certain areas where you think, all right, this is – if I don't know anything about the Wayne State coaching staff, and I've never heard of any of these guys, but they've had three straight undefeated seasons, and they lead their conference in recruiting rankings every, you know, February. I'm going to look at their staff and go, who are the running backs coach and the wide receivers coach? So that's probably who's doing the heavy lifting. Well, Del McGee's been running backs coach for Kirby Smart now. He's been since he got hired. Now, I'm not going to say it's misleading, but it's misleading. It's Bill Clinton true, legally accurate. When Kirby in that cut said, this about Del McGee, this about Del McGee, this about Del McGee, he's been a head coach before. He has been a head coach before. He was the interim head coach at Georgia Southern in 2015, coached him in a bowl game. Served as the interim head coach. They won, so he got the dub. So he's run game. Actually, he's a running backs coach. And if you go back and look, the first couple of seasons, he was running backs coach. Now, what was that quote? What was Kirby? He wasn't just, hey, I think I'll talk about Del McGee. It was under the banner of your coaching staff starting to get picked clean. And the coordinators, well, of course, teams will go to your coordinators, but what about when they start going to the position coaches? Well, Dell is a position coach, but this is what you have to do when you have somebody like Del McGee who gets the signatures and is a good coach, is you have to invent stuff. What do you mean? I mean, you have to invent ways to keep him, because when Del McGee was first hired, he may have been running back coach. Then he became running back coach and assistant head coach. Then he became running back coach, assistant head coach, and run game coordinator, because you have to keep adding a title when you give him a new contract, because other programs have come sniffing around Del McGee. So when you see someone go from wide receivers coach to passing game coordinator, is that a real thing? Sure. But somebody else has a whole lot of input. If you're labeled as passing game coordinator, and then maybe somebody else is run game coordinator, well, okay, well, what player are we going to call? Is it going to be my play, or is it going to be Steve's play? Because he's run game coordinator. So you have to have somebody who's really in charge. So a lot of times when you add assistant head coach, it's the requirement that, well, you can leave if it's lateral. We're going to hire you to be our running backs coach. Well, I'm not just the running backs coach anymore. I'm the assistant head coach as well. Are you going to hire me for that? Well, no, we already did that for our own DC. So that's Del McGee, and that's what Kirby's talking about, because it's going to move beyond just the coordinators. And Del McGee, he knows how to run a practice, thanks. All right, and he can set out recruiting priorities. He can do all that. He can make all the decisions. But it will get more difficult for Kirby. He identified Del McGee because Del McGee's been around the SEC, and he probably encountered him on the recruiting trail, and he was on the staff at Southern, and then he hired him when he got to Athens. And now Del McGee's going to be head coach somewhere. So I don't mean to limit him when I say this, but remember, there are very narrow restrictions on head coaches. As far as recruiting, contact for recruiting, there are far more and far narrower. I'm talking about, don't they get one in home visit? Whereas assistant coaches, it can be scattered amounts. And so there are limitations like that, which means a guy, it used to be Rodney Garner, and I don't think that's true. I don't think Rodney Garner was going to get hired as a head coach. Damian Craig, I've heard, same sort of thing, that, you know, it was a limitation because if you hire him as a head coach, I don't know if Damian was ever going to be a head coach. Brian Niedermeyer at Tennessee, guess what? He ain't going to be a head coach. James Coley. There are a lot of these guys that the value they brought to staffs are, well, they get signatures. So if we hire them to be the head coach, well, now they get to recruit less. They're prevented from recruiting as much. So that's always a consideration. But if you can get the right head coach for your program, you put that aside. And Del McGee, like I said, I don't know. He's from Columbus, played at Auburn, from Columbus. He had coach down there as well, Carver Columbus, which put a lot of players in the SEC, and even some in the pros, some in the first round. So he's got the bona fides, and he's got skins on the wall. And as Kirby says, he has head coaching experience. He coached the GoDaddy Bowl in 2015. Dan, how are you?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, something that me and you have talked about before. The Piper comes for everybody. I mean, remember back in 2015 when Georgia hired Kirby Smart, it was, hey, what are they doing that works so well over there in Tuscaloosa? Let's go take from that, and let's see if we can be able to recreate that here. Kind of to what you just said right there, everybody, and I'm not speaking out of turn here, everybody believes and knows that Brian Harsin's a dead man walking. Hell, as a matter of fact, on Monday, we're probably talking to J.G. Tate or somebody about whoever the interim coach is and what's next for Auburn, and that could be Del McGee. Because remember, too, there was a time that Auburn had that southeastern part of Georgia on lock when it came to recruiting,
yeah,
where they were able to get guys from Columbus, from LaGrange, from Albany, from wherever down there in southwest Georgia, and get them to come across the state line and go play at Auburn. And that's something that they could do. Hey, you know, our rival has hurt us for years. Let's hurt our rival. That's kind of what Georgia did. I would not be surprised. If Auburn were smart, that's the direction they would go. You know who else I think the Piper is going to be coming for here pretty soon is Ryan Day. Because I understand the reaction that comes whenever you bring up a Big Ten program in these parts of the country. It's, oh, wait till they play Georgia or Alabama. They're going to get raced, and it's going to be, you know, not even a competition. They just don't even have the same amount of players. They don't even have the same amount of talent. If you're saying that about this Ohio State team, you're just not watching them close enough. Because remember what I talked about with the 2019 LSU team, where I said they could run the football when they needed to. They won that Auburn game in 2019 because they had Clyde Edwards-Helaire yep. on their team, and they were able to get those tough yards and be able to close out that game and win. And, of course, some people afterwards said, well, in 2 weeks they got Bama. They're kind of looking ahead. Or it's also, too, oh, man, maybe there are some concerns up front for LSU. But if they were running the football the way they were, I don't think that the second part was necessarily that big of a deal. I think that what's held this year against this Ohio State team is the first impression. You always talk about Chuck, cannon shot, come out with a cannon shot. In that case right there, it was against that Notre Dame team who did them no favors by going 0-2 to start the season. But the way that they played in that game, you're saying to yourself, all right, maybe this Ohio State team isn't as good. Aha, they didn't have their top receivers. And now that receiving game is starting to get going, and it's showing you how good it is even without Jaxon Smith-Njigba, where you've got Cade Stover there at the tight end, who's an absolute weapon. You've got Emeka Egbuka as well, and also Marvin Harrison II, and an offensive line that has drastically improved from the team that we saw last year that got beat by Oregon and got beat by Michigan as well. And oh, by the way, too, if you're trying to say, well, the defenses might be an issue, look out for Tommy Eichenberg all over the field, because that's a guy that can make some plays for you, and that's a guy that could be an issue. So, Georgia, Alabama fans, I get it. You should feel good about your team. But if you have Ohio State on the other side of you, it ain't going to be an easy day at the park.
Dan, tremendous. Great efforts today. Game with that Rolodex. David on the ones and twos doing what he do. Everybody across the network. From Arkansas to Florida, Kentucky, just giant circle there. Louisiana, everywhere. So appreciate y'all tuning in. 22 hours from now, I'll have recharged batteries, and I'll be talking more college football right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.